Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today, so let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and this show is brought to you by our friends at Moda Fabrics. So today, I'm going to talk a little bit of fall to kick off the show. I've got fall fever just a little bit late this year for some reason, but it's in full blown. And I have got Kathy Sheldon here, who is a designer and a editor with Lark. So we have a fantastic book about felt to talk about. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, Pat. How are you?
I am excited. I'm excited because fall fever has hit. It took a little while.
Yeah. I live in the mountains in Asheville, North Carolina, and it's really, it's just hit here. Autumn is just gorgeous. So I've got it too.
I know. It's like one of those things where just something has to happen. And then all of a sudden now I want like orange and black and throw in some purple. You know, I mean, I want those colors.
Yeah.
Now, you do many, many things. One of them is you're a fantastic designer, and you also edit books for larkcrafts.com. You know, do you ever get, like, super overloaded with all the creativity all the time?
To be honest, yes, I do. I get overcrafted sometimes, and especially if I'm working on a deadline, because I'm mostly doing books. We're very deadline driven. So if I'm on a deadline and I'm working on the 10th project in a row or something, I can start to feel like I've got craft overload. So,
yeah.
I head outside and go to my garden if I can. If I'm in Asheville, which is where I live most of the year in North Carolina, in the summertime, I'm lucky enough, I live in a little cottage on a lake in Maine. So, if I need a break from crafting, then I can go jump in the lake and swim or kayak or something. So,
oh my goodness.
Yeah, I do think you can. You know, sometimes it's just too much to be when you're sewing, especially, you're really looking closely at things, and after a while you need a bit of a break.
Yeah, I can totally relate, because when you're doing thing after thing after thing, and you probably have multiple items that you work on, you know. And probably out of season, like when the book we're going to talk about is called Felt-A-Ween, and I'm sure you were probably doing this in like the spring or something.
I was doing it. I was actually doing it on my screen porch in Maine, not this past summer, but the summer before that is when I was really working on the projects and editing and all of that. So, yeah, it is one of the funny things about what I do for a living is that I'm always making winter Christmas projects in July and summer projects in January. And looking up and kind of confused when I'm done at the end of the day, confused about what date it actually is.
Now, tell me, this is like a series, the Felt-A-Ween, which is just so adorable, but you have a whole group of books that I think quilters, if they haven't discovered them yet, are going to love them because they're all felt projects. And how many are in the series?
Well, there are three that are done and available for sale, and we're actually, my co-author is Amanda Carestio, who's just so wonderful to work with, and so we actually, Amanda and I are just finishing up the fourth book, which will be a follow-up Christmas book, and that will be out around this time next year.
Yeah, so. Perfect. I love Christmas, too. That's always, a good thing to decorate around.
Well, that's how we got started with this series is that Amanda and I noticed, I guess about 5 years ago now, we noticed two things, that people were making very kind of fresh, fun things we hadn't seen before out of felt. And we also noticed that people were making sort of slightly more modern, contemporary Christmas decorations. So the example I like to give is that instead of everything being Christmas green and red, they might be turquoise and red, which is one of my favorite color combinations. So we proposed doing a fresh new Christmas felt book to our publisher. And the sales team actually shot it down, didn't want us to do it, and said no one is interested in felt and holiday books don't sell. But Amanda and I are stubborn, so we went ahead and we did it as our first ever digital book, an e-book. And it sold really well, well enough that the next year the publisher came out with it as a printed book, and it has just sold super well. We've been so happy with the way it's been received. So we followed that up with Heartfelt Holidays, which has felt projects for the whole year round, all the holidays, all the seasons. And then just now we're out with Feltoween, which has got the 40 Halloween projects in it. And then next year we'll have the first book. The first Christmas book was called Falalala Felt, and we're referring to the next one as Falalala Felt 2, but I don't know if that will really be the name. We'll have
the
to come up with another
title.
Clever one. Yeah, exactly.
Working title.
Exactly.
Now, I find it really exciting that the books have so many projects that, you know, there are a lot of the projects that are smaller, so they're really doable. You can do little tiny accents. But, you know, Kathy, let's just talk about felt, because I think that there are people still who don't realize, because they haven't explored it, that felt has changed a lot since what we used when we were little kids.
Yeah, it really has, and that was one of the things we noticed. There are just so many kinds of felt available now, and so it really makes it exciting. And you can use 100% wool felt, which is beautiful, thick, sturdy felt that comes in beautiful colors, but it's a little bit hard to find. You won't find it in most big chain craft stores or fabric stores, or if you do find it, there'll be kind of a limited selection, but it's pretty easy to find online. But it is pricey, so we tend to use 100% wool felt for smaller projects or something really special that we're making. Mm-hmm. I think my favorite kind of felt is wool blend felt, which has the wool felt blended with a synthetic felt, and but still has the beautiful subtle colors of wool felt and just that nice thickness to it.
For that one, let's stop a second and just talk about the wool blend, because what is the percentage of wool?
Well, it varies, but it's typically pretty high, somewhere around 80%. But it's going to vary depending on what you buy and where you buy it.
And then what is the next kind of level down from that as far as wool percentage?
You know, I don't know how low a percentage of wool felt you can find in terms of the amount of wool that's in it, but typically what I see is around 80% wool or even higher than that. And it's just enough. It still really feels like wool felt, but it just, I'm sure it's less expensive for the manufacturers to make, and so the price is better, and it drapes a little bit better than the 100% wool felt. 100% is really pretty stiff, and so while it's wonderful for a lot of uses, there's some things that it's a little hard to use it for.
Yeah, you probably couldn't wrap it as well around shapes and things like that.
Yeah, so when the blend is nice.
What is the crafting felt then that has no wool? What is it made? Is it acrylic or?
Well, there are a couple different things. You can find bamboo felt out there, which is usually about 50% bamboo, 50% rayon. But what you're probably going to find in most of the fabric stores you go to or chain craft stores is acrylic felt, which is just made up of acrylic fibers, or there's a lot of eco felt out there, which is actually very similar to acrylic felt, but it's used making recycled plastic bottles. And I've seen that in all over the place, so that's really pretty easy to find too. And that felt, when you go into stores now, there's so much of it, so much more than there was even 5 years ago. But you'll see either whole bolts of it or, you know, find the aisle that has it, and you'll see all these sheets of crafting felt in all different colors. And it's great because they're usually like 9 by 12 sheets, I think, and they're inexpensive, so it's really fun to buy a lot of different colors. But you do have to be a little bit careful, because that felt, now that they're making more and more of it, it can be a little thin sometimes. So I like to hold each piece up to the light just to see.
See
sure
how
it's
thick
not
it
too
is.
Thin. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Because your projects, you don't want to put all that work into it. And then I would imagine it might tear even.
It will tear a little if you, it might pull a bit at the seams. It can get fuzzy if it's overhandled a little bit, it gets a little fuzzy. So, yeah. And the other thing, though, I want to mention that's kind of cool, and Amanda and I have been having fun with it in the books. And I should say we do these books with all these other designers, too. Mm-hmm. So I'll mention them later. But Amanda and the designers and I, you can find adhesive-backed felt, which is nice for just making little appliques and things to add on to a project, and lots of felt coming in patterns, animal, jungle print patterns, et cetera, and even sparkly felt. So that's all fun.
Well, you know, Amanda, we end up having just a short segment, and so I want to be sure that I get in a little bit of tips that you have, or a tip that you have for cutting the felt, because you like to use freezer paper.
I do. And I don't know if that's something that you think your listeners know a lot about, or would you like me to explain it a little bit?
Yeah, we have about a minute, so just explain how you use it.
I take the freezer paper that you can find. You won't find it in craft stores easily, but you'll find it in grocery stores right near where the aluminum foil and wax paper are, and just trace your template onto the non-waxy side of the freezer paper, cut roughly around it, iron it down onto your felt, and then cut out the template, and it just gives you nice, crisp lines. You can tear away the freezer paper, and it doesn't leave any residue. So it's just a really easy way to trace templates onto felt.
And does that also make it so that it doesn't shift?
It does. It is. Yeah. It's exactly what happens. It kind of grabs onto the felt, and then it's really easy to cut.
Can we wash any of these things?
You can, but we have an adorable project that Cynthia Schaefer, who also photographed Feltoween, made for us of a Day of the Dead skull on a T-shirt. And we recommend you turn it inside out, wash it in cold water, and don't dry it. Felt's not great for washing, so we don't tend to have a lot of wearables in our books.
So tell me your favorite project in the book.
Oh, gosh. Well, I love those bat socks, which were also made by Cynthia Schaefer, who photographed the book. She's so talented. I really love the spider wreath, and I love the little felted acorns.
Yes. Yeah, the acorns are so adorable. Well, Kathy, I just loved hearing all this information about felt. You know, I haven't worked with it myself in a long time, and I definitely have to go check it out.
Oh, do. There's just so much of it out there. And the main thing about it is it's just so easy to use. You know, since it doesn't fray, it's simple. It's easy.
Thank you, Kathy.
Thank you.
Choose from more than 100 of your favorite patterns from American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilts and More, and Quilt Sampler, all available online. Buy downloadable patterns today at apqshop.com.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To store a matching spool and bobbin together, thread both onto a long pipe cleaner and twist the pipe cleaner ends together.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
Follow American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit Pinterest.com/APQ magazine to join the fun.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and Nancy Mahoney is here this month of October, and today we're going to talk about the designs for machine quilting, because people always want to know how and what should they design. So thanks for being here, Nancy.
Thanks for having me, Pat. Good to be back.
So when you started quilting, I think you were like me. You probably knew you were going to make a lot of quilts and you're going to have to figure out how to quilt them, right?
Well, that's part of it. But I go back a little bit farther and then I started hand quilting.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I didn't do that for very long. I did it maybe for 6 months.
Yeah, I actually did several years of hand quilting, but as I became more prolific and wanting to make more quilts, you know, you have your bucket list gets longer and longer. I did realize I needed to learn how to machine quilt.
Yeah. And now we both free motion quilt, which is where we use a darning foot and we can do, you know, nice curves and things like that. Do you remember way back there was a book, Nancy, that showed you the same quilt done with totally different designs?
Sort of. It's hard to, I've seen so many books, it's right. Hard to remember it exactly, but I do sort of remember that, yes.
You know, it really inspired me because I saw it very, very early in my quilt making. And I was like, wow, that makes a huge difference. What you put, it's like the third layer of design, right?
It is.
So what do you think, can you just tell people what the difference is, just the basic difference of free motion versus non-free motion?
Well, free motion is really, like you said, you use a darning foot, and most of the time you're going to drop your feed dogs. That's the recommended way to do it, mm-hmm. Drop your feed dogs. And that allows you to move your quilt freely under your needle in any direction you want to go. Not free motion quilting is usually done with a walking foot, and you can only go forwards and backwards. And it's great for straight lines or really gentle curves, mm-hmm. But free motion quilting really allows you to move your quilt in just any direction you want and do just a myriad of designs.
I also think it's faster.
Oh, much faster.
Yeah. Yeah. Just to be able. And it takes a little while to perfect. Most people have to make a couple quilts before they feel like, you know, they've kind of got that mind memory motion thing going on. When you look, talk to me a little bit about what happens when you look at a piece design, Nancy. How do you decide what to quilt on it?
Well, I really start thinking about it when I'm assembling my quilt. And as I'm starting to put the blocks together, and sometimes even as I'm, you know, assembling the blocks, I'm thinking about, now how am I going to quilt this or what kind of look do I want? So that by the time I have it assembled, I sort of have an idea in my mind. And it may just be that I know this is a quilt that I'm going to do an all-over design on. I'm going to do something easy and simple and fast, mm-hmm. and it's just going to be an all-over random sort of design. Or I may have by that time decided I'm going to do something that's more custom. Mm-hmm. And then when I've decided I'm going to do a custom design, I work a lot with stencils. That comes from my hand quilting background.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So I will pull out my stencils and I'll say, well, you know, this will fit in this space. This would look good. This is going to, you know, I'm not going to hit those bulky places if I mm-hmm. use this design or it's the right look or something like that. That, you know, so I just start playing with designs. If you don't have stencils, a really good thing to do is to get some plexiglass. Mm-hmm. And you get a big sheet of plexiglass. I would recommend putting tape around the edges of it so you know where the edges of the plexiglass are.
That's a good tip.
And then draw your design out, and you can use a dry eraser. So you could try something and then erase it if you decide it doesn't work. Or if you really like something, you know, then you know what you're going to fill in that design with.
You know, are you out there collecting, you know, designs? I know you have stencils, but are you like collecting things from pictures from the internet, maybe where you see somebody's work, or if you're at a show, do you take a picture and do you keep like a portfolio of those to reference?
I do. I don't keep it, you know, physically like in mm-hmm. a binder, but I do keep it digitally.
You know, it's really interesting, isn't it, to do that because other people's thought process might trigger your own. You may not want to do it exactly like that, but it might show you an option.
Oh, exactly. In fact, I saw one it's been a while now, where they had just done some more or less straight lines. Now, mm-hmm. straight lines are really hard to do free motion, but from that, seeing that design, I thought, well, I can do that and just make them wiggly lines, make them mm-hmm. wavy lines. Mm-hmm. And it was an easy all-over design. It went really quickly, and it really had a nice look to it when it was all done.
Now, when I do applique, you know, I'm not as good about planning things out as you are, Nancy.
I don't believe that.
Of course, I have people who quilt for me also, but when I quilt for my own things, I kind of fly by the seat of my pants a little bit. And also when I applique, I have sort of a go-to, you know, like a thing that I do, because my applique is generally what I want to have featured. And so I want to have things lift off the surface of the background.
Oh, I agree.
Yeah, so I also have bigger shapes. Not everybody makes as big shapes as mine, but I outline everything, and then I generally try to do some sort of overall design in the background, just sort of to compress the quilt some and give it texture, and then do big sort of images or sort of accents within larger shapes. Like if it's a big basket, you have to put something in it because it'll just poof out, right?
Right, right.
So do you approach your applique any differently?
I do quite similar, actually. I like to outline the shapes, and then if the same thing. If it's a bigger shape, like a basket or maybe a big flower petal, I'll put a design inside that. And then I might do the borders, you know, do something different on the borders or something, and fill in the background with a just kind of a fill. I'm not really big on doing stippling or meandering. It's just a personal thing for me that I kind of think it's been overdone. So I tend to look for a different type of fill.
Right.
But definitely you want to do something in the background so that helps give relief to your applique shapes.
Yeah, I tend to do loops or swirls. Yeah, I don't want to have to figure out never crossing a line. That's just too much.
Yeah,
work.
Exactly. You know, and working yourself into the thing with, for those who haven't done any kind of stippling or meander, you want to not cross the line, and sometimes you'll work yourself into a corner and then you have to figure out how to get out of it, or, you know, or I lose my concentration and all of a sudden I'm lost. So,
I like to cross the lines. Just do it and get it over with. There we go.
Exactly.
That kind of deciding. Now, both of us use sit down long arms, which basically operate similar to your home machines, where you make a quilt sandwich and then you push the fabric under the machine. But they are much more powerful and have bigger throats to them. Tell me about the machine you use. You use George.
I use George. I use an APQS George. And I really like George. I quilted on my domestic machine for 20-some years before I got George. And the thing I really like about George is that larger throat plate. It's double the size, if not more, than it is on a domestic machine. So I can do a much larger quilt, and because it's more powerful, I can do it in really a lot less time.
Yeah, I think that's the part that people don't realize is that the sit-down long arm, it is a single-purpose machine, like buying a serger or something. You know, it only does one thing. But the speed of it, not that you have to quilt fast, but just that it can, allows you to have, I think, more consistent stitches and to quilt quicker.
Right. And you're not struggling with that small throat, which is that takes a lot of time. Every time you have to rearrange your quilt and refold it or roll it or do, you know, whatever you're doing, you're struggling with it, and you're just really not doing that on a sit down machine like George or what you use. I think you use a different machine, don't you?
Yeah, I have a Handy Quilter Sweet 16. There's also many other machines out there that are similar. So the Sweet 16 has a 16-inch throat, so it's a little bit shorter, but it's still plenty. It's tons of room, and the space is incredible just to not have to worry about a large quilt all bunching up.
Sorry, you go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say it's heavenly to not have that sort of planning for large pieces.
Right, and you know, a domestic machine, the throat on an average domestic machine is only about 8 inches, between 8 to 10 inches. So even at 16, that's a huge amount of space that you have to work with and keep you from having to, you know, redo stuff all the time, having to re-roll it and refold it and work around that.
Now, for people who haven't done this very much, I always suggest that they really get like a bunch of panels or charity quilts, something that you're not too concerned about. And I say you need to like quilt them for like several as fast as you can, like several days in a row, like every day for a little bit or every couple of days, because you need to build up some memory, right?
You do. It's really hand-eye coordination and, mm-hmm. and memory muscle, mm-hmm. Muscle memory. I can't talk today. What can we say? It's why we can quilt our name.
Right.
For almost everybody, it's really easy when you start quilting. You can quilt your name mm-hmm. because we're used to writing our names.
Mm-hmm. Do you have another? Do you like to tell people to practice on paper?
I do. I think you should, to a certain extent. If you're learning a new design or you have mm-hmm. something you haven't done in a while, practice a little bit on paper and get that motion in your hands mm-hmm. that you need to go, and it will really make it easier for you. I find the designs that I quilt all the time are so much easier because I have that muscle memory.
That is a perfect example. Perfect. Because, you sit down and there's like your go-to things. You can do them and not have done them for 6 months. Something new, you almost need – sometimes people will do a little sample just to warm up on it.
And I do that. Whenever I sit down to quilt, I get, whatever batting I'm using, mm-hmm. whatever fabric, if I'm using batiks or I'm using regular cottons, whatever my fabrics are, I just make a little, 10-inch sandwich, and I just sit down and quilt for a few minutes just to see. For one thing, I'm checking my tension, I'm checking mm-hmm. my thread color, and I'm just warming up my hands and my whole motion of how I'm going to be moving my quilt, because I may not have quilted for several days. Or 2 weeks or more. Now, if I've quilted yesterday and I'm working on the same quilt today, I don't do that. But when I start a new project, I do.
Nancy, this has been so much fun.
Oh, goodness, we're out of time again.
I know. It goes really quick. Everybody should go to allpeoplequilt.com where you can find videos on free motion quilting. And visit Nancy at nancymahoney.com. We'll be right back.
Thanks, Pat.
Thanks.
Boost your sewing skills from start to finish with daily tips from the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration. This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. Set yourself up to stitch a little every day. When you finish stitching, before putting everything away, rethread your needle and take the first stitch. Then the next time you pull out your project, you'll be ready to sit down and start stitching. Make the most of your sewing machine by watching Machine Minute videos brought to you by Babylock. Learn about popular topics like tension troubles, stitch length, needles, buttonholes, zipper basics, and more. Watch these videos at allpeoplequilt.com/videos.
Take an ultimate shop hop tour of 11 top quilt shops. You'll find them all in the current issue of Quilt Sampler, available now at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and I have Roseanne Kermes from Rosebud's Cottage. Hi, Roseanne.
Hi, Pat. How are you too?
I am good. We're going to talk about some trends, a couple of trends that you and I bantered back and forth on what's out there that you're seeing, that I'm seeing, because we both travel around and do a lot of things. You brought up rogue quilts, and part of that is because of the big, big row-by-row state event this summer. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, I think even before this popular row-by-row experience shop hop this summer, I had begun to see row-style quilts coming up either through customers or online. And I think it's a style that was popular a while ago, kind of diminished a little bit, but is making its way back in. It was one of the first beginning quilts that we taught when we started teaching people how to quilt.
Really?
We started doing
was it row by row?
Oh. No, it was not row by row, but it was a row style quilt.
A row style quilt,
Well, we concentrated on a block mm-hmm. Each week, and then they had to build them into a row, and then we put them together. But I think it's just a great way to teach people techniques and also show them how blocks can look together. Mm-hmm. So I often go to this quilt when I'm trying to think of a block to use in a in another quilt, or wondering, you know, what does mm-hmm. it look like if I turn in stuff. So, it's interesting to look at things that way, and I really think that the ones that look the best are the ones that have some kind of color uniformity, you know, the color palette kind of work. So
you know, I've noticed that when somebody starts, you know, a designer is out there that starts putting out a particular style of quilt, then they sort of build a momentum for that style. You mentioned that the amazing Lori Holt of Be In My Bonnet had done mm-hmm. a row by row, and it just sort of sparked things a few years back.
Yeah, I saw it. I think it was in the end. It must have been like in 2012 or so. Cause she published a book last year. But I started seeing my friends taking part in this roll-along quilt.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was fun to see it because people were showing online mm-hmm. what fabrics they were using. And I'll tell you, each of those rows looked different, you know, based mm-hmm. on how people place their fabric or the design and stuff. At first I was wondering, like, you know, how are they going to look together? But then when you start seeing people sewing them together, it's like, you mm-hmm. want those, you know?
Yeah.
But her book, you know, I have practically worn through her book, that she came out after that roll-on mm-hmm. called Quilty Fun. And the reason I like it probably more than actually sewing the rows is I like to see the techniques. How are these blocks constructed? Mm-hmm. So I kind of use those kind of books for, exploring and inspiration, I guess, more than anything.
So the row by row, you know, that happened this summer was mm-hmm. different shops all building, a free pattern.
Yeah, and that was a little bit different. Mm-hmm. There were 1,250 shops across the country, and we had some parameters. We had a theme. The theme was seasons, mm-hmm. and we had a size range. Like they couldn't be more than a certain height and width. Mm-hmm. But the thing about that was each row on its own could be a standalone project. They could be, you know, like a table. We made ours into a table runner as well as a row. So mm-hmm. it would be interesting that way. But when I started seeing some of the rows that were being posted, I was wondering, well, how are these all going to look together? But what I found is that, you know, we don't always give quilters the opportunity to be clever. And there were so many clever quilters who took those rows, made them just like the direction said, and then put unique twists on them as they put their rows together. It wasn't just sewing one row after another and then quilting mm-hmm. and binding it. Some of them used the rows as borders as well, and it just gave those quilts a really unique look. You know, some of them made them asymmetrical, so a lot of the rows were up in one side, and then they used mm-hmm. more rows as borders too. So I think that was pretty clever. You know, but like I said, each row by itself can be used independently too. So there was more than one use for that. And I think that was the appeal to a lot of the customers who stopped by our store to pick up the rows, is they wanted to use it in more ways than one, as a pillow or just as inspiration too. So, they're going to do the row by row experience again coming up this year. And I believe all the states will be represented. And so we'll find more about that next week when we go to Quilt Market. But it was very, very fun to see what was going on with that.
So we have to fly to Hawaii to get blocks. Is that what you're telling me?
Yes, and Alaska.
Yeah. And Alaska, you'll have to go there
to,
we go.
You have to go to Alaska as well. And
is there a shop
in Canada.
Yeah. Is there a shop in Puerto Rico? I want to go down there in the winter. That's
I don't know. We'll find out at Quilt Market next week,
okay,
won't we?
You watch for that for me. All right.
I will.
There's another, do you have another style out there that you've noticed recently that's sort of made a comeback?
Yeah, it's a a style that has always kind of intimidated me because it looks so complicated. And most of the time it's because I see them at quilt shows or competitions and they are just so magnificent. And those are medallion style quilts. But like you've shown in some of your patterns and what we're seeing with some of the other designers is a medallion quilt does not have to be complicated. It can be actually easy enough, challenging, but still kind of, you know, fun to do as well. I don't know if you have seen the new bookazine by American Patchwork and Quilting called Superstar Quilts. The first quilt they have in there is one called Center of Attention. And I think that pretty much describes what a medallion quilt is. That big center is what is the focus of the quilt. Mm-hmm. Have you ever seen them where they're like on a bed and then there's, you know, all the borders around it, and that medallion is right smack in the middle, and it's so beautiful.
Yeah. When I did my book, Medallion Magic, I borrowed an antique quilt from Julie Silber, who is a dealer, and we used it as just an inspiration photo in the book and photographed it on the bed because it was, you know, big enough to drape over the sides, and it's just spectacular, too. And they're fun, aren't they? They're like the row by row, but so you get to try different blocks.
Yes, and a lot of times, yeah, like there's sampler blocks or a focus, like you have that one, the one called All Roads, where you have a little house in the center, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and then it's, you know, you've blocked around that. Or some of the other ones, the other one called Antique Mist, where a design is pulled out from the center out to the corners mm-hmm. Through, looks like they're nine patches, I think.
Yeah.
But almost gives it that Irish chain kind of look. But it still focuses on that center of the quilt. When we were at the Minnesota State Fair, we borrowed a quilt from Terry Atkinson called Monterey Medallion. And for those who've maybe been quilters for a long time, they'll know that this book was published a long time ago, 2005, I think is the copyright. Mm-hmm. But the shop owners wanted it reprinted after it went out of print, that Atkinson mm-hmm. Designs reprinted it. And I thought what was interesting about that book is there's a simple version that when you look at it, a beginner could do this because it's just blocks. But mm-hmm. then there's a more challenging version for those people who want just a little bit more. But as we were helping people look at it and not be afraid of it, they started to see how they could break it down. And in their head, they started to see that a medallion quilt really doesn't have to be as complicated as you think. They just look scary.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think maybe it's because Lone Star, you know, that Texas Lone Star,
right.
one with all the diamonds
yeah.
and Y seams. I think a lot of people have that kind of caught in their head as what a medallion style quilt is. And they see the diamonds and the Y seams and they're like, oh no, I will never do a quilt like that.
I do. I think that when, like you said earlier, when you go to a show and you see some of the totally spectacular pieces that people will enter in the show, and then you're like, okay, well, they're all like that. But they're not. There's all kinds out there, you know. So, and I just think the variety, even the globetrotting I did this year is a mm-hmm. sort of, you know, a start of a medallion. You could make it even bigger. You could add more rows around it. It's, you know, just gives you a chance to do a little bit of fun stuff and not just the same block over and over and over again. Now there's some other trends. Tell me something else that you see coming up, like sort of like upcoming. What do you see sort of happening out there?
Happening. Let me think here. Well, I know you and I go back and forth on this whole folk art primitive thing. And you say it's dying. I say it's living. And I think for me, it's probably because we are so heavily into wool applique, and that mm-hmm. I see a lot of those designers that do wool applique also doing quilts in that style and stuff. But in addition to that, there's some of the fabric companies are going to be launching primitive lines of fabric at the quilt market next week. RJR, I know, is one. Wyndham, I believe, is another.
Mm.
And I just got an email this afternoon from Diamond Textiles telling us to come and see their new primitive line of goods at their booth and stuff. So I do think that there's that the pendulum is maybe, you know, swinging more towards center, that we're mm-hmm. starting to see where traditional and modern are starting to coexist, and people, you know, can choose a little bit easier, not feel like they're out of trend by not liking a certain style. So I do see a lot of traditional desire to do those kind of things. When we were at the Minnesota State Fair last month, we saw a lot of people asking about embroidery, and that's still, you know, it's like they can't get enough of that. And we sold a lot of patterns that had to do with embroidered seams or dish towels or things like that. And I think that's because they're portable. So I don't know. What have you seen?
Well, I've been noticing just like two things that kind of hit me recently is one, it kind of made me giggle in a way because, you know, when you think about children's prints, you know, and I'm going to use the unicorn because, you know, little girls, unicorns, a children's pink, you know, pink fabric with unicorns and, you know, butterflies and all that. Well, now those little girls are adults and the women just feel attracted, I think, to that, iconic, you know, unicorn. So I saw a fabric with silhouetted unicorns and they were done like in taupe and brown and black. So, you know, there is a children's print that we can love again as an adult and actually use and in our work and won't have, you know, butterflies.
It probably has just enough of a touch, back to being romantic in the sense that, you know, it's something from their memory. But, I know what you mean. The styles have been, the colorations have been updated so it's something that you can use in your house. I think you see that, too, with, the woodland creatures, too. They're, you know, like that. I know we talked about the hunting or the lodgy look.
Right.
I was just at the gift market last week, and there's still a prevalence for that lodgy look, but it's not the deep, dark browns and things. It's a lodge look that's a little bit lighter and, you know, a little more, I don't want to say trendy is like the wrong word. I don't know what else to say, though.
I'd say hallmark contemporary. You know,
contemporary,
It's a little less rustic and a little bit more, so it fits in with everything else you might have if you don't have a rustic look. I also think we have really short time, but I also think photography has really bumped up the playing field when people present their stuff now. Just some really beautiful things designers and quilt shops are showing in their emails and their blogs.
Yeah, I think the ability to take photos easily and to load them up easily on some kind of social media, whether it's your website or your blog, it really makes a huge difference. You know, you can just really quickly take a beautiful photo. It doesn't take much to stylize it and still have it look really sharp and to be able to inspire people by the photos that you're taking.
Well,
I love it.
Thanks, Roseanne. We're out.
We're out. Talk
we're
to
out.
You
again, we're Pat. Out of time.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts & More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To maintain consistency when piecing, keep your eye on the spot where the needle enters the fabric, not the needle going up and down.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Keltner, executive editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making a pillowcase and making a difference. It's easy. Make and donate pillowcases in your local community. Use your favorite pattern or choose from one of the free patterns at allpeoplequilt.com. Whether you sew pillowcases with a group or by yourself, you can help someone less fortunate. You could donate them to a women's shelter, boys or girls club, homeless shelter, veterans home, or any other organization you know of in need. Once you donate the pillowcases, log on to allpeoplequilt.com. Click on the box in the upper right-hand corner for the 1 million pillowcase challenge and enter the number of pillowcases you created to our national tally. We know quilting changes everything, and we're out to show the world just how much quilters care. Please join the American Patchwork and Quilting 1 million pillowcase challenge. We're counting on you.
C see what other quilters are up to on the American Patchwork and Quilting page on Facebook. Simply go to facebook.com and search for APQ Magazine.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I am your host, Pat Sloan. And if you see any trends out there, you can just email them to me because I'd like to know about them, pat@patsloan.com. So throwback, it's like a throwback Monday for me. I started sewing by making clothing. And so I just never get that out of my system. I'm always attracted to anything that has to do with clothing and garment making. And refashioning is just awesome. And so you are going to be excited to meet Beth Huntington, who is the author of the Refashion Handbook. And she is here with me now. Hi, Beth.
Hi, Pat. How are you?
I am fantastic. Did you start sewing clothing? Is that how you learned to sew?
Yes, I did. It seems like I've been sewing forever and mostly clothes. My mom taught me when I was pretty young. We used to, go pick out patterns and fabric together, and then we'd listen to music while we were sewing. And, I just have great memories of learning how to sew. And, of course, my first projects were probably pretty funky things, pillows or whatever to go in my bedroom or something. But I think when I really got the bug to sew clothing was probably third grade. My mom had made this great pink corduroy pantsuit with a matching jacket, and I thought it was just like so gorgeous. And I just knew right then I wanted to sew clothes, and so I have been sewing clothes for a lot of years. I've sewn a few quilts. I learned how to do crazy quilts and things, but probably for the most part, it's been clothing, or maybe sewing, covers or things, home decor sewing too. So
when did you start refashioning? Your book is called Refashion Handbook, but you didn't just start out and say, I'm going to write a book about this. I mean, you've been living this refashioning of clothing for quite a long time.
Yeah, it was kind of funny because really when I think about it, I feel like I started, 3 years ago or something with the whole refashioning thing. Mainly I thought I just really, I would sew, but sometimes, the patterns that you buy at the store, they're not really made for my body. So I didn't really know, I wasn't real well versed in altering patterns. And so I kind of set out on this adventure. Okay, I'm going to learn how to alter patterns, and I'm going to get, my clothes to fit me perfectly. And so I kind of stumbled on this, and I realized, gosh, how fun to just, take old clothes that maybe don't fit me or maybe been in my closet, they're outdated, and just change them up a bit and make them into something more modern. And I just haven't been able to stop. I got addicted to it. But actually, when I went back to Minnesota last summer and I visited with some childhood friends and we were talking about this whole thing, and they said, oh, Beth, they go, we remember you in like sixth grade, and you'd take a orange pair of bell bottoms and you'd make a bag out of it, or you'd take, like in sixth grade, I think I had white straight leg pants, and this will tell my age right here, but bell bottoms were coming in. So I opened up the bottom and put this red, white, and blue fabric in there to make my white jeans into bell bottoms, and thought they were quite nice. And so I guess I've been doing it for a long time, but really it's mostly right around 3 years ago or something when I really got into it.
So basically you're taking your own clothing and or clothing that you thrift and or given, and then you're altering it. How do you decide how to alter it? What is that mind process that you go through?
Well, sometimes it's the actual garment itself. You look at it and you can see the pieces of it that you really, really like, and you want to use those pieces. And then, you know, maybe, and then you have a couple garments and you're like, you know, I really like this part on this one and I like this part on this garment. And then just naturally they flow together when you just start to change them up a little bit. And so sometimes it's the garment itself. Sometimes I'll go to start or set out and say, I really want to make a sweater dress. And so I'll actually look when I go thrift shopping, I'll look for certain sweaters that I think would work great for a sweater dress for the top and the bottom. So a lot of times it's not a definite, you know, on purpose thing. It just kind of flows and happens for me.
So in the book, you have some really, really awesome and amazing sort of walkthroughs and details, you know, so you explain, you know, how to take apart a seam properly and do a French seam and, you know, the hemming and these different things. But you also have actual what I would call patterns, because you have to find, you're not making clothes from scratch. Tell me what one of the easier ones is in the book for like somebody just starting.
Probably one of the easier ones would be where I took a straight down dress, sleeveless dress. I'm sure I wore these things back in the 90s when I was teaching. We used to call them Costco jumpers. and where it's just straight down, it's really not very flattering. And where I just cut the middle out of it and bring the bottom up, you know, maybe take in the bodice part a little bit and bring the bottom up to the waistline, which creates a much more flattering silhouette because you've got, you know, it goes in a little bit at the waist. Mm-hmm. And then just take the middle part and create some sleeves. So that's probably one of the most dramatic yet easiest projects in the book.
Now the concept you have here, you have like melding of clothing, like tops to skirts that make a dress. How hard is that to do?
Well, you know, of course, for me, it doesn't feel hard, and I understand that if you're just learning to sew, it might feel a little bit overwhelming. But I do want to encourage people that really, especially when you're using thrift store clothes and you go and you can just buy them for a dollar, you know, it's really not a big investment. So if you just start cutting and just start piecing things together and not worry about making a mistake, because if you do, well, you know, oh, well, it was only a dollar, right? and then just try things out. And I think most people tell me that once they've just taken those first cuts and just decide, okay, I'm just going to cut into it, I'm just going to get started, it just gets so much easier after that. And, you know, so I would say, you know, use some designs of other people's first when you're first starting, and then pretty soon those ideas are going to start to flow. You're going to go into a thrift shop and look at something and go, you know, I could probably make, you know, change that shirt and change it into a top of a dress, or, you know, take that sweater and make a bag out of it, or, you know, because you just look at the pieces of it that you really like, the fabric or the design or something on there, and then use that, the good parts of it to create something new.
When you were doing the sweater project, you took like just a pullover sweater, then you made it more, you know, then you opened up the front of it so that it became, you know, with a little button and it was more, you know, current looking. How did you deal with the wool and the sweater cutting? That just seems so intimidating.
I know. And people ask me that question all the time on my blog when I cut into sweaters. And really, you would, you know, if you cut it open and then washed it, of course it would fray all over the place. Mm-hmm. But when you're just working with it and sewing it right away, as soon as you cut it, it doesn't just start to fall apart. It just, it really keeps it shape. And then, you know, and as you're sewing, you're going to end up, on that particular project you're talking about, I added some lace as a facing on the where I cut it. And that just holds, as soon as you sew that seam, sew the lace to it, it just totally seals that seam up again. So I never have any trouble with fraying. I've washed things, you know, everything turns out fine. So, but that is a question that people ask me all the time.
And I know it's just one of those, it's sort of like, well, you're right. It's not going to just fall apart all over the place as soon as you make that cut. That's,
I suppose it depends. You know, I mean, if I was using a really loose weave,
right.
you probably have to be a little careful and you know, probably sew it right away before you start working, you know, just sew along the edge to keep it intact. Yeah. But for the most part, you really don't have to worry about it.
Now, you told me you have a new venture coming up that's like a sewing studio.
I do. It is like so much fun. I have a hard time leaving at the end of every night when I'm there. What it is in my little town here, we have a museum, and above the museum, there's this big, huge space, and they the last 25 years, it has been an artist's studio. He's a painter, has been renting it and using it for his painting studio. And he has since retired and moved to Vancouver. So it's been open. And I talked with my husband the other, you know, last spring, and I was like, wow, that would just be such a great spot to have, because my sewing adventures had totally taken over my house. I don't have a very big house, and so it was like everywhere. So of course he was all for it, and but I really had no idea how much fun it was going to be and how much I was going to love it up there. It's about 4,000 square feet. It's way more room that I need, but the light is great up there, so when I'm sewing and blogging about it, the light is perfect for photos. I'm getting ready to set up a video studio up there. I'm hoping someday to have like sewing craft parties up there and maybe some sewing classes up there, because there's so much space. There's a kitchen, there's bathrooms.
Wow.
Oh, it's got these 20-foot ceilings. The acoustics are wonderful. It's just this great spot. And we also had, not this Saturday, but the Saturday before, we had the book launch party up there, which was great fun. We had live music. We had sewing-themed cocktails and mocktails, and just really had a great time. I think the bodice ripper was the biggest hit for the sewing-themed cocktails.
So how do people keep up with you, Beth? We have just about a minute.
How do they keep up with me?
Right,
they can, if they Google the Renegade Seamstress, they can find my blog that way, and it should come right up on there. And so that's one. I also have a Facebook page, The Renegade Seamstress. So if they want to subscribe to that, they can subscribe to my blog with their email. I'm also on Instagram. I'm on Twitter.
Super.
Let's see, what else do I have? Yeah, I think that's mostly where they can find me. And of course, my book, the Refashion Handbook, that would be great too.
Yes, it would. Everybody needs to get it. It is fabulous. Beth, thank you
so much, Pat.
This has been so much fun, Beth. Now I want to go like sew clothing.
Oh, good. I love it when people tell me that.
Yes. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you for having me.
This is American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. If you've not been out to our website recently, allpeoplequilt.com, we actually have a new page for the radio show. Go over to Magazines and More, click on the Quilting Podcast, and there's all of the different episodes, and we have a quote from the different guests that I've had on. I have a little welcome note, a little video to you know, for you to watch. So allpeoplequilt.com. I'm your host, Pat Sloan.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques. Thanks for listening.